Okay, welcome everybody. It's March 12th, and tonight is the 12th in this year's season. We have a very special sponsor for tonight, and that's from Dr. and Mrs. Honig. It's their mothers, Hessel Hadassah Bas Yaakov Kohen, and Devorah Bas Reb Shimshon Shlomo, and both Neshama Shel Aben Aliyah. Thank you so much for the sponsorships. Okay, so today this is the last of the season, as Harvey said, and Mitzvah Hashem, next year, we'll be starting again November 12th, Mitzvah Hashem 2022, and Mitzvah Hashem hopefully in Yerushalayim. Okay. Last week we spoke about the life and the times of the Besht, of the Baal Shem Tov, and about him. And today I'd like to speak a little bit about what his philosophy was, and a little bit about his Talmud. He had many Talmudim, as we mentioned last time, but one in particular, Yaakov Yosef Polonayo, if I'm saying the name correctly, Polonayo. And I just want to put out on the board again, you may have seen a lot of these photos. This is Poland, this is where Poland, Lithuania, this is where Hasidus started, and breaking it down into its regions. It started in Bologna, and more specifically in the southwest corner of Poland, which is the area was called Podolia. Again, we mentioned last time it was a place that went back and forth. It was like the Wild West, so to speak. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, Rabbi Yisrael Bar Shem Tov, he was known, if you were to say today, who is the Hasidim of today, who was the founder, it would definitely be Rabbi Yisrael Bar Shem. He spent a lot of time before he became famous, before he went public with his learning, his knowledge. He spent time in the Carpathian Mountains. Again, this is just a little bit of a review. And his connection was with Achi Ashiloni. Achi Ashiloni, the Rebbe of Eliyahu Navi, and he was the one that was teaching him his Torah, the secrets, and a lot of the mystical things. He was Achi Ashiloni and one of his rebbeim from his secret society of great men. They encouraged the Baal Shem that when he was 36 that he should start going public with his learning. One of a few things that we just mentioned last time, again, he was known to say that people, the simple blessing of a simple Jew is worth to Hashem as much as learning is to a big Talmud Chacham. He also stressed purity of intent, thoughts, joy, humility, and prayer. I think we're gonna touch on each of these a little bit more later. And when he finally made himself a name, he moved to the village of Mezhevoz, if I'm saying it correctly, in 1740. And that's where he was for the next 20 years. I believe he passed away in the year 1760, I think it was, that he passed away. And for his last 20 years, this is where he was. This is where the center of Hasidus was. Okay, and that's where that became the center of Hasidus, the movement that he started, so to speak. This movement, these are a list of his Talmidim. All of his Talmidim were known. There are stories about each of them. I think the two that are most prominent that we're going to talk about is Yaakov Yosef of Polonia, and Dov Ber Mezrich, the Mezrich, the Magid of Mezrich. He's going to be Glenn's going to take over the entire movement. And he's going to make it from a small movement to the establishment, so to speak, the main way of life in Eastern Europe, or in the Ukraine, Poland area. Again, it was his movement.
Yeah.
I think so, yeah. Yeah. And I think he had something in with the Nazi press. He's double. It's a shame we get to Nazi press. I think we'll come back.
Who was it, Spali?
Le Spali. Okay, so each of these, there are, you know, these names are known, but one other appeared on this list, Avram Gershon of Quito, was actually his brother-in-law. He married the sister of Avram Gershon, but again, it seems that at first many of them, I accept him, but didn't think he was as, Hashem was as great as he was, but over time they realized his greatness. How in the year that he passed away, he was on Shavuos. He passed away on Shavuos in the year 1760. And again, it was he was rather young. The movement was very very small at the time. But and we mentioned last time that someone wanted to say that. It was the loss of the Frankists, all those Jews that when they started to convert to Christianity, it seemed that the Baal Shem, he felt that there was a tremendous loss to the Jewish people. Whereas other rabbis, great people, felt, thank God this is finally a break. We don't have to deal with these heretics anymore. Baal Shem felt that he could have been Makari. Not converted, and his famous line was that as long as a limb is attached, even if it's diseased, it could become better. Mm-hmm. Once the limb is detached, that's it. There's no hope for that limb. So he left. He died, and then a year later, all of his talmidim, they got together on the yard side of Shavuos. They got together. And who sat in the head of all of the Talmidim was his son Tzvi Hirsch. And the way the story goes is that Tzvi Hirsch got up and he was wearing the white clothing or whatever, the leadership clothing. And he said his father came to him in a dream. And he said that the next leader should be Dovber of Mezerich. And he took everything, he took the clothing off, and he donned the clothing on Dovber, and he became known as the Mago of Mezerich. And he was very, very equipped to be the leader of this movement. And through him, it spread all around, all over. But after his death, it was no longer one movement. The movement seemed to have spidered, I don't know what's a good word, is to go into different directions. And each of the leaders, the rabbis that were leading the movement, they had a different way among themselves. Maybe it was unique for the area that they were in. It was also unique for their personality. And it became a movement of different types, different stresses, but all under the same umbrella of Chassidus. Okay, so that's the movement we're going to continue. I don't think we're going to get to tonight the Maggid of Mezerich. Mitzvah Shem, next year we will start from him and all of his Talmidim. Very, very, I don't know, in a positive way, I'm using the word colorful personalities. Each one had some special things about themselves and in their lives and how they touched the lives of their Hasidim and their students. But I would like to talk about one of them, one of his students, and this was Yaakov Yosef Polonoa. I'm sorry, yeah, Yaakov Yosef Polonoa. Now, Yaakov Yosef Polonoa was, again, one of his, the Talmidim of the Bash, but he almost seemed to be like almost the senior Talmud, the senior among of all the leaders. And one would have expected that maybe Yaakov Yosef should have become the leader. The story is told, how did he become a follower of the Besht? The story is told that in the city of Sharavarad, he was the rabbi, and at first when he found out about the Besht, he would get up in shul and he would talk against the Besht. And he would say, like originally it's another movement and it's another things that we have to go, you know, fight against. And he started to actually, you know, tell his congregants how they could recognize who is a, what's a chassid. And if you see them doing this or you see them doing that, you should know they're a chassid and you have to fight them and you have to stop them. Fine. So in Sharavarad, if I'm saying the name right, Sharavarad, the Besht used to stop by, you know, he would travel around, and that was one of the places where he stopped by. Okay, one day he stopped by, and in the morning, he was in this street, the marketplace, and he started telling stories. So the Jewish people on the way to shul, they would see the Besht there, and he was telling stories, so more people and more people started listening to the stories. And he was telling stories, and he had a lot of old people. Meanwhile, the Rabbi Yaakov Yosef was at shul already, and he's looking at the clock, and he doesn't know, where is everybody? So where are they? So he goes out, and he sees that they're all in the marketplace, and he sees them talking to the Besht. So he said, no, how could you do this? I don't exactly know what he said to the Besht. But the Besht said something, and this is what I'm quoting to you now, is I saw in the, it's a Sefer Hasidic Masters, I think it's called, it was put up by Rabbi Arya Kaplan, you know, one of his many, many books. So he has this book, and this is where I'm telling, paraphrasing the story from this book. And the Besht said back to Rabbi Yaakov Yosef, he says, if you want the horses to neigh, you gotta hold back on the reins. That's what he told him right then and there. Now, after that, Yaakov Yosef was different in terms of his relation with the Besht. And it seems that every so often, clandestinely, I guess at first, quietly, he would go to the Mezubish and he would meet with the Besht, and he would come back and he would learn, and before you know it, sure enough, he was becoming, you know, a Talmud of the Besht. And then at some point, his congregants, who he taught to be against the Hasidim, right, he taught them how to identify who a Chassid is, well, they identified him as a Chassid, and they figured it out. And it says, the story goes, is that on a Friday afternoon, what do I have it over here? It was at one Friday afternoon when they figured it out, they threw him out of town on a Friday afternoon, and he had to spend that Shabbos in a outside village, outside of the town, outside of Sharavarad. And since that time, he took positions elsewhere. He was appointed rabbi in Nemirov, and then eventually in, there was another place, I don't know if I have it here, another place, I forget where he was an accepted rabbi, and that's it, he became one of his ardent followers. When he wrote his book is sacred, really, it's called Tovas Yaakov Yosef, and it was printed, the first time it came out was 1780. And what probably happened with this book is that this was the first time it was written the wisdom of the Besht. Without this safer, the Besh probably would have been like in legend, you know, and then people would have certain things of what he said, but it was recorded and very clearly did Rabbi Yaakov Yosef clearly write things that he heard from the Besh. As you can see on the board, he said that he quoted, he says, you read the book, 249 times does he write in the Sefer, told us Yaakov Yosef, he wrote, I heard from my teacher, and he writes the following. He made his Sefer like a, he did it according to the Parsha HaShavua. So, you know, every Parsha HaShavua, he had something else to say. I didn't read the Sefer, I don't own the Sefer, but from what I read from the Sefer, it seems that there were many of things that he had written, many times it had really nothing to do with the Parsha. He just was using that as a springboard to bring in things that he heard from the Besh. This book, this book was meant to shake things up a bit. You know, if he wanted to cause controversy, he succeeded. He very, very much succeeded. He was an anti-establishment type of a person. He was going after the rabbinate in particular. He felt that the rabbinate was too up there. The rabbinate was too, or was not connected with the people below. They were in their world of learning and they weren't connecting and bringing the masses up to them. He felt that there was some a certain amount of corruption and a certain amount of phony, you know, the phoniness, not so much sincerity going on. And he wrote about it. And he wrote things that he felt, and he I may have something here or there written, I'll show you, give an example. And it caused a stir. And also a lot of things, the new philosophy of the Hasidic movement really went against of what the people felt, the Rabbanim felt, the Jews felt at the time, and giving stresses to certain things that was not really, was not up until that time. So this was his book. Now it could be, I guess as Rabbi Kaplan writes, he says it could very well be that they didn't pick Rabbi Yaakov Yosef to be the leader of the movement, so he should write such a book. And from this book, it would, I call it a book, I really should call it a sefer, I don't mean disrespect for calling it a book, but he wanted him to write the sefer in order to publicize the workings, the ideas, the philosophy of the Besht. And he did a very, very, very good job of that. Okay, this is just another one of his svarim. He wrote three svarim. From 1780, I think 1781, 1786. Tzafnas Paneh was another name. I'm not sure if this was this was his sefer, but three svarim, all having to do with Hasidism and things that he learned from the Besh. Okay, this is I'll give you an example of one of the things that the Rabbi Yaakov Yosef wrote. And he was trying to explain what the issue is with the people. Now, the people, with this, you can maybe understand why the Besht was successful and other people were not. And he says, you know, it wasn't like nobody was trying to reach these people. Again, you're talking about Eastern Europe, specifically Poland, but it applied to most of Eastern Poland, Polonia and those areas, which went through the Tachbatat, and they went through the poverty and the lack of learning and the Frankists and all these things that were had enraged from the Cossacks. Still, they're going through all these things. They don't have the ability to learn so well. They're not so learned. So, you know, people were trying to reach out to them, and he says there were these Magidim. he's a mag, what is a magid? A magid is literally means a storyteller. But these magidim would go from town to town, and they would try to ignite the masses. They try to be makari the masses. Come, you listen. And he says, this is Rabbi Yaakov Yosef, says there were three types of people that came to hear the magid. Okay? One, that they came out of a sense of shame. You know, like if they didn't show up, like we're worried. You know, come on, how could you not show up? Like, you know, just, you know, so he felt he had to show up, otherwise it wouldn't look good. It wouldn't look good on his daughter's resume, you know, whatever it is. But it wouldn't look good. He had to show up. There was a second group that they would listen. Oh, and they would be inspired. They would hear the nice words. But then, you know, like, when they hit the door, that was it. You know, okay, it was a nice bark, I got it, it was great. But as soon as they left, that was it. That they weren't really receptive, they didn't take it with them. And then there was a third group, and this is the group that didn't come into, they just didn't even drop it off. So here you had, if you take away all of these three groups, who was really listening to the magid? A very, very small amount. And it was hard to, you got to get them to come, and then when you have to get them to come, you have to get them to want to come, and you have to get them to want to come, you have to get them to want to change. And this was a challenge. How do you get these people to want to come and change? And that was, this is what Yaakov Yosef was telling, and I don't know if I have it over here, but again, I took out the slide. He has another piece where he compares a magid to a chazan. Let's say a cantor would come. He says, oh my gosh, the shul would be packed. So he says, how come when a cantor comes, you know, everybody's there listening, and a magid comes and not so many people? And they would feel like he gave a few reasons. He says, well, you know, the magid, he's trying to tell me to make myself better, but how do I know that he's such a good person? You know, maybe he has the same issues that I'm having here, and why should I, how do I know? But the chazan with the good voice, if Hashem gave him a good voice, Mustami's a good person, you know? So that was another piece. So over here, he and this is where you can see where he tries to like stir the pot a bit and make things. He says there are three categories where people are denigrated. You know, he says, first of all, the first category is Jews among the nations. And here we are, we're in Golis. And this is in Parshas Yeshana. I'm sorry, the one before was Parshas Re'eh. So this is in his Sefer, this is Parshas Yeshana. He says there's the one form of Jews among the Goyim. And the Goyim, they give the Jews a hard time, they put them down, and they make fun of them, and fine, that's one. And then there's a second form, which is worse, is when the ignorant, they put down Talmidei Chachamim. They don't understand who the Talmidei Chachamim are. They don't have a relationship with them, and maybe it may be a little bit of jealousy. They may feel that the Talmidei Chachamim look down at them, so they're whatever it is. But that's the second form, and they put down Talmidei Chachamim. And then this is where I don't know if his sefer was burnt. Not all of them, but there was a sperm that was burnt. I guess even symbolically to show that this is not what. You know, things that he said should not be printed. And I don't know if this was the reason, but this is definitely one of the things. And he said the third form is when Talmidei Chachamim, they attack other Talmidei Chachamim. And he says when Talmidei Chachamim attack other Talmidei Chachamim, it's the worst. It's the worst thing because if nothing else, well, they're attacking one another, so the Jews are fighting. And secondly, those people that are not Talmidei Chachamim, they learn from Talmidei Chachamim. So, like, Talmidei Chachamim are attacking us, like, what do you want from us? I'm attacking the Rav of the Shul. What do you want from me? That Rav is attacking the Rav of the Shul. So, like, why am I any worse than the other Rav? Now, the other Rav, they may be attacking in terms of ideas, in terms of, you know, on a certain level, if that's what all it is, that would have been fine, but maybe it just degraded a bit. But once it degraded and simple people see, So then that's so this was his way of like sticking it, so to speak, to the non-Hasidim that were, you know, attacking the Hasidim. This is something here that he wrote. Now he goes to here's another thing he was in terms of what he's trying to get people to understand, or he's attacking again, shaking things up. This goes back. We spoke that in Poland, it was very common. What type of learning was it? It was a pilpul type of a learning, where if you had somebody who was very sharp and analytical, and he can go ahead and he can take a piece of Gemara and he could, ask, questions, and he could do fancy things, and he could explain one Gemara in a different way and a third way, and he could make a whole building in terms of learning, and he comes up with a beautiful a piece of Torah. But he was very against that. He says, because what are you doing? What's the whole purpose? So the Yaakov Yosef is saying it's all gaiva. It's all for his own personal benefit and gain. And the people who he's saying it to the masses, they gain nothing from it. So again, if this is the main way that they are learning, this is an acceptable. Again, it was starting the Jewish people were starting to move away from this, especially with the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon, he was the one that put the stress in on real pshat, learning pshat, and not this popal type of learning. And it was on its way down, but it was still prevalent. And his whole point is that's not what we want people to go up and say. We want, in fact, you want to give words of muster, you want to give words that the people, the masses, could understand. This is again Pasha Slukas. Okay, however, he says, he says he understands why a Rav would have to say a pshat. And he says, and we call this mitok shalo lishma balishma. He says, if I would come up here and I would give you musr, so who am I to give you musr? Why do you think I know more than you? So Rabbi Yaakov told us, Yaakov Yosef, he says, look, he understands that a person, in order to show who he is and how great he is, so that he's a Talmud Chacham and he has the ability to give musr, so he would get up and he would give this type of a discourse. And he would show that he's smart, and he showed that he's a Talmud Chacham. And once people, they may not understand everything he's saying, but they'll realize he's a Talmud Chacham, then he can go ahead and he can give words of musr. So that's where he holds where there could be a place for this. And he calls it mitok shelo lishma balishma. Mitok shelo, it's not the way we would consider shelo lishma balishma. We would consider shelo lishma balishma saying your kid wants, he's not into learning yet, so you give him a candy to learn. Eventually he likes the learning and he'll learn without the candy. That's mitok shelo lishma balishma. Here he's saying shelo lishma is he has to build himself up and make himself into a bal gaiva, so to speak, and at the expense of maybe being haughty, so he has to then go ahead, so then he can influence the people that are around. By the way, just as a point, this is what Rabbi Yisrael Salanter did in the Musar movement. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, he was very into Musar, and he wanted the Musar movement that all started with Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. He was a genius beyond a genius, and he said about himself, had he not put his focus on teaching Musar, he could have written scores of Sfar, many, many, many Sfar. But he chose to put his stress on this. What would he do? He would come into a town, and he would put, a list of marakomos on the board. I don't know if it was 100 marakomos or 50 marakomos, but he would put marakomos on the board, so on the yeshiva or wherever the base medrash was, and people would have the access to them. So I don't know if they gave him a day or a week or whatever it was, and they would go ahead and they would look at all of the sources, And then he'd get up there and he would give a lecture on all of the sources. And then before he would finish, he would say, you have to learn Musa. You have to make yourself better. All the learning Derech Eretz Kadmon of Torah, whatever he would say, but that would be a tremendous influence. And here he's talking to Talmidei Chachamim, and they realize his greatness. And the story goes, I'm digressing, but the story goes with Rabbi Yisrael Salanter that he did this once. And he put up Mamakamos, and you had these anti-Musser people. You know, every time, every action begets an equal and opposite reaction. And there were people also, you know, look, Musser you can get straight from the Torah, from the learning, and it helps, makes you better, and there's something to that. But to go ahead and make a special Musser Sefer and Seder, and actually had a special base medrash, a Musser base medrash, to do that is not necessary. So to get back at Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, they took his 50 mamakamos, or however much it was, and they changed every one. And they made every mamakamo, nothing had anything to do with the next one. Okay? And they put it up on the board. So, you know, what happened is Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, on his way up to the stand, he pulls down the mamakomos, puts it on the stender, and he, like, looks at the mamakomos, and they have nothing to do with each other. Is that the one he put up? What does he do now? So he looks at it, and he spends about, I don't know, a short amount of time, I don't know, it was 30 seconds, a minute, and he gives a lecture, he gives a shiur on the new mamakomos. On the new mamakomos, whatever was posted, and he made a shiur on the mamakomos that he had never seen, and that were all up there, and he made a shiur on that. Fine, and then he goes ahead and he gives musar and everything. So afterwards, the people that changed it came up to him, and they asked for mechila that they did it. I guess they didn't realize how great he really was, but they asked him mechila. And then Rabbi Yisrael Salanter says, I want to tell you something. I don't know why he told him this, but this is the way the story comes down to me. He says, I want to tell you something. You know, I took 30 seconds to, you know, or a minute, whatever it is, to, you know, I waited before I gave the shiur. He says, I came up with the shiur in 10 seconds. But it took me 45 seconds to think to myself, is it a balgaiva if I give the shiur or not? Is it musar dick to give the shiur or not? The shiur I had in 10 seconds, I had the shiur. You know, I spent most of the time thinking, should I give it or not? Is it, but you know, anyway, I guess that's what he was trying to, you know, the point he was trying to get across. All right, that, so I digress. But the same idea, he says, is what Tovus Yaakov Yosef was trying to say about having to be a Talmud Chacham. If you have to do it, again, this is all things that are like trying to, you know, set things right, the establishment, what they were doing and what they should be doing. And here it is, it says, Mitoch Shalosh Shema Bala Shema. Okay. Now, there are two or three things. This has, a lot of it comes from, what I'm about to say, comes from the Tovus Yaakov Yosef. But what was different about the Besht and his students, and how were they able to reach the people when the Magidim weren't? Right, that was really the question. They weren't coming to shul. They weren't coming to listen. They weren't receptive. So, what was special about the Besht? So, the Besht came up had a certain philosophy, and this philosophy is a Kabbalah type of a philosophy, and the philosophy is like more that all Jews. I guess in terms of time, maybe I'll just say it outside. I'm not an expert in this. First of all, this is a hakdama. I don't, you know, this is not. I'm just learning this, how it applies. I have not learned this directly, so I, you know, if I'm just saying this, if I'm not saying something accurately, it's me. It's not the. It's not what the philosophy was. But this was sort of the idea, is that first of all Jews are connected, okay? We're all one. We have, our neshamas all come from one. When one person sins, it affects another person. When one person does well, it affects Klal Yisrael. And there are a lot of sources that they bring down, and they okay. So one of the things, though, and that he said, and this was very controversial, is that some people are given a higher neshama than others. So I guess, how do you know if a person becomes a Rebbe? It's because he has a higher neshama than others. And the source, your bracha, comes through that person. In other words, that Rebbe. So if you're part of this, if your Rebbe is your Shefa, I guess your source. So this Rebbe has a source for a certain amount of Hasidim, a certain amount of Jews that come under him. Okay? So it's in everybody's best interest to be part and get close to that Rebbe. It's in the interest of the Rebbe, and they talk about this, there's a lot of literature about this, how the Rebbe has to lower himself to come down to the people. You know, he'd love to, you know, you want to be up there and just in your own Dalai Lamas with all your ruchnis and everything, but if your chassidim are down there, you're going to be brought, drawn down. So it's in the Rebbe's best interest to bring up the people, because if his people are brought up, he's going to be brought up too. Now it's in the interest of the people to connect to this Rebbe, because that's where their bracha is coming from. Their bracha is all coming from this Rebbe. And therefore, if you don't connect to your Rebbe, where's your bracha coming from? You have to connect, because the bracha comes from the from Shemayim to the Rebbe and then to you. And if you're not going to go and you're not going to plug in, so to speak, you're not getting any bracha. So, like, all of a sudden, there was I don't know what you want to call it, a paradigm shift, but there was a different understanding. It's not like some rabbi is coming and telling you to do something. And who is he to tell me what to do? Oh, no. You don't show up, that's it. You're out. You're losing out on everything, both Ruchnius and both Gashmius. And it's, everybody's invested in this. The Rebbe's invested that his congregation becomes on a higher level, so he can become on a higher level. And the congregation wants to be connected, so they can be brought up also, in both in terms of bracha, in terms of physical, and in terms of Ruchnius too. And that was like main understanding, main philosophy that changed the mindset of the people. And now you have to find yourself a Rebbe, and if he's your connection and he's your Shefa, and like he brings down, that's where you can understand if somebody makes fun denigrates the Talmud Chacham. So then that's it. I don't know if it says Ein L'chiluk L'ilal Mabal, but there's no forgiveness to such a thing. And he says, that's why? Because if you're getting your Shefa, you're getting your Bracha from this Rebbe, and you denigrate him, and you severed your ties, there's no more Bracha for you. Okay. So that was one of the ideas that they changed, and that was a game changer. It, now all of a sudden, people were, and once you're listening, once you're in, you know, and these rebbes, you know, these rabbis, rebbes we'll call them, the rebbes were dynamic, and they had what to say, and you're plugged in, and they're plugged in, and yeah, it was, you know, once you're listening, once you're there, there's what to hear, and there's how to change. Okay, because of the time, I think we're just going to go, I think I you know, pretty much said in a very, very succinctly, that's what this was. And another part he had is called Dveikus clinging to Hashem, which your mindset of the person, what should you always be thinking about? And he actually brings a Ramban, says like a person, quotes a Ramban, that a person should always be thinking to Hashem to such a point where even when people are talking to you, your mind is thinking about Hashem, which is really a tremendously high level. Everything that you do needs to be, you have to think about in terms of Hashem. He says, almost like when you're learning Torah, you have to think that I'm learning Torah for Hashem. You know, and that's, you think of the letters in terms of davening, you think of the letters. Again, I'm hoping I'm getting it right on the very short. Again, if I'm not accurate on this, I apologize. But and this was also sort of controversial because, you know, the non-Hasidim would say, what do you mean you're thinking about learning and that's what you need to do? Just learn. You know, just sit and learn. But you have to think that I'm learning to Hashem and that's why I'm learning. The learning is the connection to Hashem, not the thinking that I'm thinking about that I'm going to come close to Hashem, so therefore that's all my learning, or that's all the mitzvah. The mitzvahs and the learning that you're doing is what's connecting you to Hashem. So there also was a little bit of a difference. These are all these again different thoughts. Whether it's the Ramban, whether it's the Tosfos Yaakov Yosef, Lishma means that a person should have in mind for the sake of the word and the letters itself. Again, the ideas of words are important in the letters, and Hashem looked at the letters in the Torah and he created the world, and all these letters and forms and shapes all have importance. And to the non-chassid, look, you know, the learning was what's important, not necessarily the letters that are making up the learning. Okay, just more idea on that. These are all from the Tolis Yaakov Yosef. Okay, so these are, and then there's just one third section that I wanted to get to. Yes, I apologize for looking at the time. We got a late start because of the introduction. And that is the Hasidic approach to joy and prayer. And that was also big, big stress on... you know, up until that time, it seems that when people would daven, they would daven quietly without moving. And they made it into loud, and they were making it into an event, you know, and they were saying it loud, and there was movement and shuffling. I think shuffling, all this shuffling came with the Hasidic movement. Yeah. And also the idea of joy. And this was something that the Besht, this is, I think, what his great advantage over whether it was the not necessarily the Frankists, because they were just they were really off, but the entire movement of the Shabbat Tzvi movement, you know, where the people wanted to mystically come close to Hashem, but it was mystically coming close to Hashem and fasting yourself and punishing yourself and suffering so that your soul would be clean and it would you get kapara through that way. And the Besht was so against that. He said the way to serve Hashem is with joy. You can get as close to Hashem, what they're saying, getting close to Hashem by fasting and suffering and punishing yourself, you can get to Hashem with being happy and enjoying yourself and making your life, doing things that would add simcha. That's a winning recipe. Who would not want to join such a movement? And that was another something that resonated with you, or resonates with us. We would, of course, you know, and you always have people that feel that they're very on a more maybe ruchnius level or on a holy level that may feel, you know, that their way to connection to Hashem is taking the route of fasting and such. But for the masses, you know, you can go and yet you can have your Shabbos table and you eat. And when you eat, you're saying that bracha and you're thinking about Hashem. And you, when you're in joy and you're besimcha, this is what Hashem wants. And that's the way you come close to Hashem. So you have a tremendous connection. So that is really, I guess that's really what I would have if you had, like, say, a three-pronged idea of what the early basic Hasidic movement was about, and that's how it changed. It made a tremendous change in the relationship. And it caused many adherents, and that was the beginning. It was an answer to a problem where you had very, very wonderful people that were ignorant, not necessarily because they wanted to be ignorant, they just didn't have the means to be able to sit and study, and their lives were poor, and they just, you know, they didn't want to be told what to do. And now all of a sudden, you had somebody coming in and saying, you got to be connected. You get connected, you get brachas. You have to enjoy. You have to have intent. You have to put your mind towards serving Hashem. And this was the beginning of the movement, and this changed things around. In Mitzvah Hashem, next season, Mitzvah Hashem, I hope to continue with this. We'll start with the Maggid of Meserich, when he took over, what was his life about, and his Talmidim, all of them started spreading to different areas. All of them had different talents, different kochos, and today, whether his Talmidim was the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Breslov Rebbe, Rebbe Elimelech Milozhinsk, and others. So a lot of what we know now is all starting from Maggid of Meserich and his Talmidim. Thank you all very much for all coming for this entire season. It is a tremendous chizik for me when I see everybody here. All right, have a easy time.